Hi, everyone. I'm Belinda. I'm alcoholic. It's always a blessing and an honor, and it still baffles me that I have the pleasure to be up here and share my experience, strength, and hope, and I think more importantly, how I develop, maintain, and try to grow my relationship with the God of my understanding. First, I want to thank Chris for calling me. Hi, Chris. I don't know where he is. For calling me and asking me to do this. And the committee as well. I have a lot of people on the committee that I love and admire, and I'm grateful for that. Normally, I'm not nervous to tell my story. You know, when you got Mary Thayer here and you spend many hours with her, and she awakens your spirit to see some truths. I've got that going on. I've got some new truths that I'm just trying to sit with, and it's uncomfortable, and I don't like it. But I'm looking forward to the peace and the change that it'll bring within me. I can't express my gratitude to be here. Yeah, I live in Kenner. I look around the room and I see so many people I love and admire. The gracious Mama Gail, who read How It Works, happens to be my mother. And she's been in Al-Anon 52 years, and I'm grateful for that because she's a fine example of what love is and expressing God's love. Before I go on, you don't have to do this with me, but I really need to, because, I mean, I just got this stuff going on up here. And if you would, just close your eyes just for a minute, please. And just when you take a deep breath in, breathe in the word love. And breathe out fear. Breathe in love. And breathe out fear. Just one more time, take a deep breath in and breathe in love. And breathe out fear. All right. Ooh, it's a lot more peaceful in this room. I'm grateful for the message as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it is a sufficient substitute to try to live life sober. I think the solution to any problem I have is in the Big Book, and it might tell me to seek professional help or medical advice or, you know, read other spiritual books and stuff, and I'm grateful for that. I grew up in an alcoholic home, and I loved dancing, swimming, horses, and I knew I didn't want to be an alcoholic like my father. And so I spent many years, actually 32 years of my life, trying not to be that. When I grew up and started drinking, my mind would say, I thought it meant you had to drink every day to be an alcoholic, because that's what my dad did. He drank every day. I was delusional. There was a time I said, I'm an alcoholic. I just thought it meant I can drink more than you. I mean, I just lived in this delusion. I've blown up two marriages. I've been in sexually abusive marriage, physically abusive marriages. I've been molested. These things don't make me alcoholic, though. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous describes it perfectly. One part it says every alcoholic has one symptom in common. And that one symptom in common is that once I start drinking, I can't control the amount I take. Now, I absolutely believe in the singleness of purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that is to help alcoholics. But when my dad picked me up, I'm sitting in bed wanting to blow my head off at this point. And my mommy and daddy, I call them and ask for help, and they pick me up. And by this time, my dad had been a sober member of AA for over 30 years. And he asked me the question. He said, Belinda, are you alcoholic or drug addict? Now, I want to talk about the delusion I was living in, not necessarily my drug addiction. I don't even really know what that is. I'm pretty much sure I probably am. But I want to talk about the delusion. Because I told my dad, I'm a drug addict, Daddy. Drugs brought me to a place on top of the alcohol. But I'm so grateful is that once I y'all taught me what it meant to be alcoholic. You see, because I thought this particular substance was my problem. And if I can just get off this, everything would be okay. I had no idea all the other stuff I was doing or the drinking I was doing. I didn't know it was an issue. And so I think we have a responsibility in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I meet with women, I want to talk about the drinking. So I'm just going to want you to consider, if you're sitting in this room and not sure what you are, if you're just a drug addict or just a drug alcoholic or whatever, just take a look at your drinking. And I'm grateful they taught me that. It didn't take me long to figure out, but I know some women I work with, it does. And so I asked them this question. What did your drinking look like the first time you drank? Don't worry about all the other stuff you did. Just let's talk about drinking. What happened the second time? How about you write down 10 times of what happens once you start drinking? Were you always able to control and enjoy it? You see, I mean, I blacked out, I switched drinks, I did all that stuff. Blackout doesn't make you an alcoholic. Going to jail doesn't make you an alcoholic. What happens once I start drinking makes me an alcoholic. In the doctor's opinion, it describes it as well. It says men and women like the effects produced by alcohol. My mom likes the effects produced by alcohol. Everybody does. It doesn't say alcoholics like the effects. Everyone does. Why do people drink? Mom will have a glass of wine, maybe two. She likes the effects. She'll do it a couple of times a year, but at two, she's calling everybody, tell them she's drunk and she got to go take a nap. It's the funniest thing. But mom can just have a couple of times a year, and she can stop when she says she's going to stop. But me, on the other hand, I have this mind that tells me I can drink successfully. But once I start drinking, I can't tell you what's going to happen. And that's repeated over and over again. I mean, I can look at my own drinking experience and see that clearly. I never intended to keep throwing up. I swore I was never going to drink so much I threw up. I thought it was the 10th one that got me drunk. The book makes clear several times, this is the first drink that gets me drunk. It's the first drink that gets me drunk. So I drink for the effect, and at some point in my drinking career, I can't differentiate the truth from the false. Something happens. My mind tells me I'm not going to drink till Friday, and I can't make it to not drink till Friday. My mind the book calls it an obsession of the mind. I don't go around saying, oh my God, I need a drink, I need a drink, I need a drink. Now, there were many times I said that. The obsession of the mind is the thought that overrules all other thoughts. So what if I blow up this marriage? So what if I throw up or drive drunk or black out? The obsession of the mind is I'm going to wait till then. I'm just going to have this. I'm not going to mix it. I'm going to eat first. And that's repeated over and over again. But it also talks about, in the doctor's opinion, I have an allergy to alcohol. Something happens to me. I can't explain an allergy. They call it a phenomenon of craving. It's this thing I can't explain. My body reacts abnormally to alcohol once I put alcohol in my body. And then that doctor's opinion, when it says I can't differentiate the truth from the false, my life seems the only normal one. I had no idea this experience wasn't going on in everyone. Then it goes on to talk about that I'm restless, I'm irritable, and I'm discontented. I am completely unsatisfied with life. I need a drink. I need a drink. My drinking experience blew up a couple of marriages, alienated my friends and family and the people I cared about. I did a lot of stuff. I was a liar, a cheat, and a thief, and I can still be that way in sobriety. It's just the truth. In the foreword of the big book, it talks about permanent sobriety. Now, I'm not saying this to toot my own horn because it's not about me. But when I came in on November 18th of 2008, I have not picked up a drink again. And the only reason I guess I feel compelled to share that is because I'm really trying to let God work through me. But, you know, a lot of people have relapses and pick up a bunch of desire chips and keep talking about, you know, relapse. And relapse is not a requirement. Thankfully, there's a sufficient substitute, and I found it in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's many people in this room that guided me through this process and taught me one day at a time how to live sober. Later on, I think it's on page 23. I'm not good with page numbers, but it says the problem centers in my mind. It also talks about at some point we face two alternatives, and I can do this before I got here or the day I got here, and I can continue to do it. Here's my two alternatives. First one, I can go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of my intolerable situation, even sober, or accept spiritual help. Mom told me to pray at one point before I got sober. She was concerned about my drinking, and I wanted to throw up, pray God. I didn't want to hear any of that. I felt like such a piece of crap. I wasn't worthy. He wasn't going to help me. I was a sinner, you know. And I love the part where it says that we can choose our own conception of God. And so for me, my first conception of God when I got here and y'all told me I can do that was God was good, orderly direction. That's the best I can do. And then somebody says, Belinda, you get to choose. Why don't you make a list of what you would like your God to look like? And I didn't even really know where to begin with that. And I looked at like somebody like my mother. Loving. My mother is so loving. That's why everybody calls her Mama Gail. Kind. Patient. And as my sobriety and recovery continues, I keep adding to that list. My God keeps getting bigger. Sometimes he gets smaller. So if you're in here and you don't want to accept spiritual help or you don't know about this God thing, you get to choose. So I just want to present a question to you. If you want a God of your understanding, do you want a loving God? I don't know anybody who said no. So if you want a loving God, every time I talk about God, higher power, creative intelligence, or when you read it in the big book, just think about loving. And it's a great starting point. But if I look at the process of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the first half of the first step says we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. I have no power. And that it says we admit we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. It's not about the unmanageability in the outside world, which when I got here, it was pretty crappy. It was very unmanageable. But then and now, especially in recovery, it's about my life's unmanageable because I'm trying to manage the feelings or the thinking. It never says in the book that I get that power back. The spiritual principle to step one is honesty. And I'm grateful that y'all taught me what it meant to be alcoholic so I can concede to every fiber in me, I am absolutely alcoholic. And this human right here can do nothing about it other than show up and ask for help. I still in my life today try to manage my life. What happens to me is my thinking starts. And then I think I know something. And then I can become restless, irritable. So the way I think determines how I feel. Because I had the ick on the inside before I got here. You know, that soul sickness, that just darkness. That's why alcohol was the solution to every problem I had. I drink and I don't have to feel any of that. And then get sober and I was 44 when I got sober. Now I've got 44 years of living life based on self. My ideas of my thinking of how it should look. And I live my life that way. And just because I'm sober over 10 years doesn't mean those thinking goes away. I was talking to Mary, a couple of people. I use the analogy of it's like a big, I know there's a lot of young people in here, but if you're not young, you know what a Rolodex is, right? Yep, there's the old ones laughing. Rolodex, and let me say for those of you who don't know what a Rolodex is, picture your contact list on your phone. And so something happens to me in sobriety and all of a sudden I go, ugh. And then I pull out that Rolodex or that list of phone and I start scrolling and I'm going to pull out a thought. And I'm going to say, I can't believe they did that. And then I still got that ick on the inside and I'm going to say, well, I don't know why they did that. I would never do that. Right? Or for the older people, I spin the Rolodex and every little card is like a program of information and I'm pulling this out. And I'm driven by these things. It says in the big book, I'm driven by fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. Step two, I didn't have to believe anything, and I'm grateful for that. But what y'all did give me was hope. I had a couple of guys that I used to party with, and they got sober before me, and I was in the delusion like I constantly live. I was in this delusion that these guys were way worse than me. And I knew if they could get it, that was my first message of hope, that maybe, maybe somebody like me could. That higher power, you know, because if I go back to step one, on my own power, I tried every imaginable remedy to make my drinking work, stop drinking, manage it, control it, all of that stuff. No human power can relieve me of my alcoholism. If anyone would have done it, my mom would have. She would have waved her little magic wand and said, be cured. My dad would have done it. But I know more than anybody my mom would have. But what my mom did do was pray for me on a regular basis. When I, you know, she read that part and how it works, where it describes, it says, the description of the alcoholic, the chapters of the agnostics, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. And these are very important pertinent ideas. The first one says that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. That probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. Here's the deal. That God could and would if he were sought. So I think the process of recovery is about getting down to the conditions, the ick on the inside. Why am I restless, irritable, discontented? You see, because my behavior was so bad and I was going against every moral and value that I had. So I'm full of guilt, remorse, and shame, which makes me restless, irritable, and discontented, and I'm going to find ease and comfort. And I found it in a drink for a long time. And so in recovery, it's the same thing. I live my life in a delusion. Somebody asked me a couple days ago, hey, Belinda, how you doing? I said, man, I'm great. I said, but Mary Thayer's coming. We'll find out the truth. Of course, I wasn't as great as I thought I was. I live in this delusion. And the biggest delusion I live in is that I have some type of power or control. And I don't. There's a part in the big book that says, lack of power is my dilemma. I have to find a power by which I can live. And so for me, that's, I think, what recovery is about, is finding a power by which I can live and continuing in a circular motion to do these steps over and over and over again. Keep trying to clear away the soul sickness, the garbage within, so that God can express himself in and through me. And step three, it says we made a decision. Some people say they made it once and never have to make it again. That's not my experience. I have to regularly make a decision that to turn my will and my life, so that's my thinking and my actions, over to care, the care of God, like here. And I am going to run the show, and not do that until I get great guides that help me see the truth. I just remembered I'm supposed to put a plug in. Stacy is our current Area 27 Corrections Committee Chair, and she came from Shreveport, and she brought a table and all the corrections literature and stuff. And there's this wonderful workshop that she's put together, a conference she put together that's going to be held at Angola State Prison. Any AA members invited. She has some registration forms. I remembered. So it's out there. So she's done a lot of good work. It took us a long time to get back into Angola. And there's many different buildings that her and others go carry the message in. But if you want to really have a neat experience, it's in September. See her sometime before you leave. I don't know how I remember that. You know, a lot of people fear the inventory process, and I see so much. 1, 2, 3, drink, 1, 2, 3, drink. And you hear in meetings all the time that, oh my God, this inventory, right? This dreaded inventory. It's not a dreaded inventory. The stuff's already happened. The reason I don't like to do these things is because I don't like to change. If somebody said, Belinda, what's your shortest definition of Alcoholics Anonymous? It is, I must change. That's the bottom line. I watch people, and my experiences is this transformation to quiet my mind, to get connected to this power. You see, because I have this disease, this mind and this body. Alcoholism is an obsession of the mind, the physical allergy, but what I suffer from is the spiritual malady, the spiritual illness. I feel the ick on the inside with everything I saw on the outside based on my thinking. It's just a crazy, vicious cycle. You should be up here sometime. But the inventory process is about clearing the garbage away, the soul sickness, the ick on the inside, to be able to put this stuff on paper as, I mean, there are clear-cut directions. Mike mentioned it last night. There are clear-cut directions about inventory and the process of that. You know, let's just talk about the molester for a second. People say you're going to write inventory on the molester. Well, yeah. But when I get to the fourth column, I got to look at my mistakes. The book doesn't say my part. I wished it did. Because when I get to the fourth column, I have to look at my mistakes. I can't look at what they've done anymore. if I look at my part, well, I'm going to pick about, I don't know, 2%, and whoever's going to have the other 98. I've got to see, even with molesters, where I've been selfish, dishonest, and self-seeking, and frightened. Where am I to blame? What are my faults and wrongs? Well, when I was molested as a child, I had no fault or wrong in that. Let's get clear. What happened to me was not right. But what I know now, because there's a prayer in the big book that says, perhaps you're spiritually sick too. What I believe, and I may be wrong, but I believe that what was happening was the spiritual malady was expressing itself through them. The spiritual illness, the ick on the inside, acted out. So when I get to the fourth column, it's not to say what they did was okay or right. It's about to see how I've taken that experience in my life and brought it through the rest of my life. Where has my selfishness showed up? Thank God most of you aren't a man in my life. Yep. You know, I mean, because I have roared through men's lives. You know, my ideas got twisted back then, and it continues to show up in my life today. Thankfully, Tommy puts up with it. When I look at this part of the inventory and look at the fourth step, the selfishness is because I'm only thinking about me and how these things affect me. I never consider what happened to them or what they've been through or the darkness within them. Never considered it, right? And I'm dishonest because I have expectations of people to behave a certain way. Speaking of that, I'm going to back up to step three. And I might say this a few more times before I'm done, but one of my favorite parts in the big book is pages 60 to 63. Describes me perfectly. I'm the little actor. I'm trying to arrange the whole show. I can be kind and loving and gracious until y'all don't do what I think you should be doing. You know, like Cassian, cross your legs, Courtney, cross yours, you know, driving in the road, people are in my way. I am the center of the universe, right? And I'm going to flip then because I'm going to come at you big. I'm going to come at you hard. I'm going to express it, anger, all of that. It says selfishness, self-centeredness is the root of my trouble. It's the root of my trouble. And this really is probably my very favorite line in the big book. It says the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, comma, though they usually don't think so. I am clueless. I am clueless until I have people like a sponsor or Mary or other people. Linda. Linda doesn't have a problem calling me out. Thank God. Thank you. To help me see the truth. The depths of my self-centeredness still blow me away sometimes. Last year I had 5 surgeries and it was one of the darkest times of my life. Not one of the, it was the darkest time of my life. I was in bed for like 7 months. I wanted to die. The depths, I didn't know you can be so consumed with self. All I thought about was me and how I felt and poor me. I'm stuck in this bed and wah, 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 wah. When I came through the other side of that, I said, oh, I know I'm only sober by the grace of God. And somebody says, but Belinda, God knows your heart. Now I heard that. Because more than anything, when I got sober, I never want to drink again. As I've mentioned, I've lied, cheated, and stolen in sobriety, and I'm grateful that there's inventory to be able to do that, to clear away the ick. Because sober, I can get full of guilt, remorse, and shame. I can feel not enough, not good enough of anything. My ego constantly separates me from things. I'm either better than you or I'm less than you. It's hard for me to be humble and be equal to the world. Constant separation. It's not where I want to live. Ego deflation at depths. That's why I need your help. I need your help because my mind lies to me. I do. I live in this delusion. I have some type of power and control. You know, in the inventory process, well, let's say I learned to pray out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's many times in there throughout it, it talks about we ask God or we ask. That's a prayer. So I memorized a lot of the prayers in there and try to apply them in my life. that resentment prayer I was talking about. There's one that says, God, save me from being angry. And I mean, I've clapped my hands together cussing and say, save me from being effing angry. But at that moment, at least I brought God in. I mean, me and God are good with that. You know, he's like, just, I don't care how you get here, but Melinda, come on, you know. There's a fear inventory. I'm driven by fear, man. And the way this spiritual malady, the soul sickness on the inside expresses itself, for me, it expresses itself in anger, delusion, avoid, control, manipulation. It's crazy. I can still roar through people's lives sober like a tornado. And I come up and say, what? Not me, it's y'all. I mean, it's just, it's mind-blowing. Y'all should be in my mind sometimes. In that resentment inventory, it says we list people, institutions, and principles. And I was about 3 years sober, and I'm grateful for a woman who had me do a principle inventory. The definition of a principle is a moral rule or belief that is either right or wrong and influences my actions. So those beliefs is like, nobody can hurt me. I'm not enough. If it's going to get done right, I got to do it. You know, the Rolodex cards, but yet I can pull the Rolodex out and say, it's either this way or that way. I mean, there's so much. Nobody can hurt me. I've been driven by that. That's some stuff that just came up again the last couple of days. The constant separation, I'm not good enough. So there's the principle. Why do I believe I'm not good enough? Well, I could take it all the way back to my dad saying, well, you can do better on your report card. Out of his mouth, into my ears, and this fine mind of mine, I'm like, I'm not good enough. And so I spend the rest of my life trying to be good enough. I need y'all to love me. I need y'all to comfort me. I need y'all to bring me light in my darkness. I need, like, I'm just taken out of this world. Please help me with this soul sickness. And I'm reaching for this fix, something on the outside. Whether it was a drink, and now I still do it sober. If y'all just behave right, I'm going to be okay. But this principle inventory, when I start looking at it, I don't know. It's so deeply ingrained in me. I don't know I'm doing this. I don't challenge it. Thank God I had guides that told me to write, to get to the truth, so that I can see when I don't think I'm good enough, I avoid. You know, I mean, I do all these things, and I can still get to that same fourth column to see where, because the way I feel or think, these are the things I'm doing. Selfish, self-seeking, frightened, dishonest, controlling, manipulative, superior, grandiose. I mean, the list is so long. You should see some inventory sometimes. But that principle inventory changed my life. So for me, I've had many women take me through the steps. I've been having the same sponsor for almost my entire sobriety. So over 10 years. But I've been blessed to have other women take me through the steps or do some pieces of inventory with them. And because the book says we can have person or persons. Now, I don't go pick and choose. My sponsor knows everything. And I say, hey, Katie Parker has this experience. You mind if I run this by her? And then I call somebody else just to get their experience with that. I'm blessed to work with some women that they think I help them. What a joke. Maybe, you know, I do believe God works through me to help them. But I don't think they realize how much they help me. Help me keep seeking and growing and changing and fighting. But that principle inventory was life-changing. The last inventory, I believe this process of recovery is circular. It's not just about working the steps once when I got sober. Oh, my God, I can't imagine. You know, I can do some other stuff daily, but sometimes I just have to pull out a notebook and write a complete inventory on it. The last piece of inventory I wrote was on the principle I should. I have this sense of obligation based on my thinking. I think I know what I need to do to please you. There's a part in the 60 to 63 that says, I can rest, meaning seize by force, satisfaction and happiness out of this world by managing well. And that's how I live my life. I'm like so delusional because I want both, by the way. I want to be satisfied and happy. And I'm trying to seize by force that stuff. Boy, I'm a little bit all over the place today. So I'm grateful that I have a lot of women in my life that are just like the big book describes. Confidential. They're not the arbiter of my conduct. And they always help me clear away what blocks me from God. And I think that's what the inventory is about. Clearing away what blocks me from God. What constantly separates me from. When I write that I should inventory, why do I have that belief? Well, somebody will get mad at me. I'm going to get angry at them and be unkind. Self, at the depths of my selfish and self-centeredness, even sober, I mean, I just have to laugh at it sometimes. And then I judge it sometimes. It just depends on what day or month it is. After all, I'm 10 years sober. I shouldn't be doing that anymore, right? Ego, boom, just separated. Just separated myself. There's a fear prayer in the book, and I use it often. And it's simple. It's simple. It just says we ask God to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. Not do. I'm a doer. Hang with me for a day or so. You'll see how I'm a doer. It's be. Just to breathe. To be present. To be here right now. So I found women in my life that I can trust. Be vulnerable with. I like the word intimacy. And I worked some steps with an Al-Anon, and she said, intimacy is into me see. And that takes courage to do something wholeheartedly. Someone's like, I'm a visual. It's like cut my chest wide open and say, here, y'all, here's my heart. This is me. This is the real me. The me that I don't want y'all to know about. The me I want to pretend, the stage character, the false self. So the women in my life, my conduct, sex conduct, you know, I mean, I found ease and comfort in guys when I first got sober. And I was blind to it, and I needed to quit long before I quit. And then I needed to quit long before I wanted to quit doing what I was doing. And then I finally totally surrendered and said, God help. It took me a minute. But what I'm grateful for is that my sponsor did not judge me. She did not say, Belinda, stay out of a relationship for a year. Now, that would have been a real good idea. Real good idea. But what she did was walk me through that one step at a time. One step at the time. That's how she says it. One day at the time. Makes me laugh, and I just said it. My sponsor lives in Lafayette. She's 48 years sober and 86 years old. She doesn't get out much anymore. But what she does do is sit in her house and have people... several people a day just come. She meets with them. It's a beautiful thing to watch. Then sometimes she'll call and say, man, I need a newcomer, Belinda. She loves her newcomer. But I'm grateful for women like that in my life who didn't judge me, who didn't talk down to me. You know, she put her foot up my rear every now and then, which I need. So with I have all this garbage and I can see my character defects and how they're expressing itself and I'm running over people's lives, thank God for step 6 and 7. There's some things I'm not willing to let go of. Oh, I dated a newcomer. Newcomer walks in. I despise people who did that. How dare you, right? Horrible until he walked in. Go figure, I changed my mind. So in step 6, it talks about like these things that are objectionable, these things that are unsatisfying to me. I don't want to live this way anymore. I don't like the way it makes me feel. But there are some things that I still want to hang on to. So when he came in, I wasn't willing to let go. Heck, there's a prayer. It says, if you want to basically cling to some things, like I like the delusion of control, so I'm going to hang on to that, right? But thankfully, there's a part in the big book that says, we just ask God to help us be willing. And so with that newcomer, I ask God to help me be willing to be willing because I wasn't willing. And thankfully for the process of the 12 steps, and I got to do more inventory on it. The truth is, you know, the book says if I continue to harm people, I'm sure to drink more than anything I don't want to drink. It was a very short-term relationship, if you want to even call it a relationship. But the truth is that I didn't stop seeing him because I'm some loving, selfless person and I was causing harm. I stopped seeing him because I am selfish, but I don't want to drink again. I hate when I tell those stories up here. Step 7 talks about my creator, because this whole deal is about me forming a relationship with a God of my understanding. And I have to be willing that he have all of me, the good and the bad. And the inventory is not about seeing the bad, 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 bad. It's about getting to the truth about the lies I've been telling myself for 55 years. Clearing away that stuff. But I've always focused on the bad, I'm this, I'm a controlling, manipulative, selfish. Where's the good? And I have women, and I still do this when I do 6 and 7, write down, make the list of the bad, which comes off the fourth column of the inventory. For me, it always starts off, I'm selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened, I'm controlling, manipulative, yada, yada. Usually a list of about 20, 25 things. This was a hard list for me to write. I wanted to see the good within me. Because I was always focused on the bad. So on the good side, I list an equal number of good qualities that I do have. The first time I did that, I wanted to put, I'm honest, but. I'm loving, but. Leave the but off. What I suggest to women when they're writing this list is to remember, though, the good within me is of God. Period. The good within me is of God. And so let's acknowledge that. In the big book, it says that the fundamental idea of God is deep down within. Mary calls it the still voice. It's deep down within, but it's blotted out by this. It's blotted out by this. The good is within. So I got to seek that. It says, I pray that you now remove every single defect of character. There's not a period there, though. I wish God would just remove every single defect of character. It says it stands in the way of my usefulness to others. And I feel like and grateful for that God has used me many times in spite of myself. Many times. When I was laying in that bed for months, I had nothing to give. But I'm grateful I had women in my life that would come. A sponsee was on her, I said she was a pesty sponsee. At the time, she felt pesty. She was a few months sober and was on her amends, and I'd get a text and say, hey, I'm coming by. I need to run something by you. And I'm thinking, leave me alone. She'd show up anyway. Other people brought me food. People would just come by and knock. My mom stayed with me for a month. I had nothing to give. Thankfully, these women were able to give to me. They probably saved my life. In step 8, it talks about we list people that we've harmed. Oh, I had a long list, and I can continue to harm people. The wreckage that I can create in recovery. Well, let me just say this. Thank God it's not like it used to be. I judge myself often, and I have to keep going to God about that, too. In step 9, I had to make that, based on this list, whether it was people or financial amends, I had to be willing. This is another step I see a lot of people go out on or not willing to do. I was talking with somebody about it last night. The amends process, you know, I'm so full of guilt, remorse, and shame. The amends process is about making amends for the harm that I caused. Now, some of my earlier amends look more like this. Hey, I owe you an amends. I'm sorry that I was such a piece of crap, that I made it all about me. Needless to say, I had to remake some of those amends. My amends typically now look like, hey, I owe you an amends I was wrong for. Not being a good daughter. Getting loaded and drinking in your house. Being in there when you're out of town. Stealing your money, justifying it with leaving a note. It's when I make amends, I want to justify my behavior, too. No, can't do that. I'm grateful that I had guides, and my sponsor says, who's the easiest ones? Pick the easiest ones. Who do you think would be the best to go to first? And she let me do those first. And out of those experiences, now I have my own experience with men. With, oh, yep, shit. Nice. Am I red? That was good. I have my own experience with amends. It's hot in here. No. Dang. I had a niece, and when I was 58 days sober, I did go to treatment. I'm grateful they sat me through. We sat in class, and they brought us through the big book. But when I got out of there, I went to live at a sober living house. I was 58 days sober, and my dad called and said that my beautiful niece had died. She took some pills, passed out in the car, just gorgeous, the prettiest blue eyes. Well, I don't know, it's kind of competition between Mama and her, but the prettiest blue eyes you've ever seen. And I knew I owed her amends. I did all the steps, not just four. I did all the steps when I was in treatment. I had my list of people I harmed. I knew I owed her amends. I was ready to make the amends. I didn't have an opportunity. So on the one-year anniversary of her death, the family got together to send up helium balloons, and somebody said, hey, let's tie little notes. It wasn't my idea for sure. Let's tie little notes and attach them to the balloon. And on that note, as small as I could, I told her I was wrong. I was wrong for not being a good aunt and not leading by example and doing drugs with her and buying her alcohol. I was wrong for not leading by example. I know I cleaned away my side of the street. What I said on that note, but with God's help, I'll do everything I can so that people don't die like you. Now, fast forward 10 years. A couple of months ago, I get a text from her brother, my nephew that's in prison. He's been in there longer than I've been sober. He likes taking pills and stealing stuff. You get in a lot of trouble when you do that repeatedly. And he has the privilege to have a cell phone while he's on work release. And he sent me a text one day. Mama Gail, her nana, brought a talk that I did to him. And he heard me mention that about my niece. And what he said to me was that, I heard your story. And I heard what you said about the note to Chastity. He said, I want you to know, and I feel like it's an obligation and a privilege for me to tell you, I believe in everything in me that she has forgiven you, or that there's nothing to forgive. I'm messing up the words a little bit. This is 10 years later. I do this work and put the results in God's hand. And these are the blessings that I get. I surrender that. I let that go. I did the work. And then it kind of makes me feel like that God can use me to help him too, because he's going to come here when he gets out of prison. There are many amends, many different experiences. Financial amends weren't done until I was 5 years sober. One of the amends I had to make was to my dad. I made amends for the harms I caused. And he gave me my first year chip. I gave him his 33-year chip. I was 6 months sober and noticed some big old knots in his neck. Come to find out he had cancer. And I got to watch my dad suffer in pain for a long time. I'm so grateful that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous allowed me to show up for him. I was able to be there one time when he was so weak he couldn't get off the floor. And on the second round of chemo, when he started losing his hair, I used to cut his hair all the time, but he asked me to shave it. It was one of the hardest things I ever had to do, but because of y'all, I was able to show up. In step 10 in the big book, it says four times in one paragraph, I got to continue to do this stuff. It's got to continue for a lifetime. I got to continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. I got to continue to do this. I got to see promptly. It says at once, not Thursday, at once. When you see, because I can be sitting in a meeting. If you want to just be entertained a little bit, watch me. I hope it doesn't show up too much anymore. Somebody will share something and I'll go, you know, there's the disturbance. Bam. In the 12 and 12, it says the spiritual, it talks about the spiritual axiom. Whenever I'm disturbed, no matter what's the cause, something's wrong with me. Y'all don't have to change. I have to change. I'm the one who has to change. So when I do that little, that judgment, here's the questions. Where am I selfish? Oh, God, you know, I know best. You know, ask myself these questions. And I love the prayer after that. It says we ask God to remove them. I can't wish my character and defects away any more than I could alcohol. I have to have God's help. It says the spiritual life is not a theory. I have to live it. I am very imperfect. I was talking to Liz last night, and you know, we joke about something. I said, just follow me for a day. Hell, you could probably just follow me. I was on speed last night, you would have thought. Mary's in, Heather's coming, Linda and Clint. I mean, you know, I'm like, yay! Linda's like, Belinda. I'm like, no! I was exhausting myself. But I get so excited because I've found so many people in this program. It's a fellowship beyond my wildest dreams. But when I'm doing this step 10 and continue to self-examine, continue to look for the disturbances within, there's some promises called the 10-step promises. There's promises throughout the big book. And all the promises are talking about the inside. It's not talking about the outside. When I'm doing this work, we read the 9-step promises a lot. And it says we're painstaking about this phase of our development. We'll be amazed before we're halfway through. Halfway through the amends, I was amazed. I didn't know I was amazed. I can look back now. But the 10-step promises, man, if you don't know what they are, they start at the bottom of page 84 and go into 85. But it talks about stuff like, I've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. It's just mind-blowing how a program of a recovery can change the inside, that it, that darkness, that soul sickness. It still baffles me. Step 11 says, sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God, praying only for knowledge of His will and the power to carry it out, because I'm going to need that. What part of this program or this 12 steps or the suggestions, you see, Mike mentioned it last night. We kind of trick you. I got tricked. It's just a suggested program. The suggestions turns into directions. It gives me clear-cut directions on how to handle the ick on the inside and live sober. But for somebody like me, it turns into requirements. And when I'm meeting the requirements and the conditions of these things, I can breathe. Sought. I got to seek through prayer and meditation. I'd love to sit up here for an hour and talk about my prayer meditation life. I will say this. I'm grateful that y'all gave me my own experience and let me to do that. But in order to do that, I've got to spend time doing it. What part of this program can I leave out and stay sober? Can I just pray and not meditate and stay sober? Can I do 1 through 9, 11 and 12 and skip step 10 and stay sober? I risk it often. I risk it often. My mind, the problem centers in my mind, so it has to start here, which changes in here. And I do that by prayer and meditation. Page 86, it's beautiful. I mean, I'll go back to that sometimes. 86, 87, and 88, there's like, I don't know, 6 prayers in there. We ask God to direct my thinking. I need God to direct my thinking. I need Him to be in my mind, not my mind being in there all alone. I did a weekend a couple of weeks ago, and a girl says, stay out of the hood. Don't go in the hood alone. It's a dangerous place, right? And it is a dangerous place when I go in there alone. And so the seeking a God of my understanding, I need I want God to express himself in and through me. And if my mind and I'm driven by self, it's not going to happen. That's why I needed y'all to pause with me for a minute. Because my mind, you know, when I see some of what I consider the greats, I won't mention any names because then they'll fuss at me after. I'm not a great. But I see a lot of great people who do a lot of great work in this room. And, you know, I feel like my ego saying I got to be something. I got to say something. And so thank you, because what I did at the beginning, that little pause and just breathing in love and breathing out fear. A lot of times throughout my day, I'll breathe in God and I'll breathe out fear. That's a form of meditation. I get it all the time. Oh, I can't meditate. I don't know how to slow my mind down. And if you think that, try for 3 minutes to breathe in something positive and breathe out something negative. It's, I heard in a meeting one day, it says, you're not going to get it by osmosis, meaning sitting on your ass and doing nothing. I was like, I like that. I want it. I mean, when I have certain people come in town and I'm fortunate enough to spend time with them, I want to suck the life out of them, suck the spirit. Just, and that way I'm changed. I don't have to walk through this. It's uncomfortable for me to walk through the discomfort. I don't like it. But I love the other side of it. That's why I was saying earlier, I'm just in a weird place. I've got some new truths, seeing how I'm living in a delusion again, and I'm just sitting with it. I don't like sitting with it. I like fixing it. Lack of power is my dilemma. I have to find a power by which I can live. Live. It doesn't say by which I can stay sober, which we do. The program of recovery, the steps are about getting me connected to the power, and y'all help me do that. In the 11th step, there's also a nightly review, and there's a bunch of questions in there. Sometimes I do it faithfully, and sometimes I don't. Start working with new women, and you get to that part, and you ask them to do it. I have to do it. My ego will get me to do some stuff sometimes. That inventory at night, when we look at those questions, I'm reviewing my day. And thankfully, there's a prayer in there, too. We ask God's forgiveness and what corrective measures we can take so that I can take that into on awakening in the morning. God, direct my thinking. Please help me pause when, don't say if I'm agitated or doubtful, when. Remember in the meeting, I make that face. There's the doubtful, agitated. It also says we constantly remind ourselves we're no longer running the show. I think I'm running the show all the time. A delusion of power and control. Humbly saying to myself many times each day, thy will be done. Now, I'd love to stay up here. I constantly remind myself I'm no longer running the show. That's a lot. It doesn't say constantly throughout the year. It says each day. Many times each day. Right? But I'm grateful through this process, it's become a habit. I wake up in the morning, I haven't forgotten to pray and meditate in a long time. Now, whether or not I'm going to choose to do that in the morning is a different story. There's been times I dabbled in prayer and meditation, don't do it at all. For the most part, I do. I want to grow. The big book talks about growing in understanding and effectiveness. There's a part that says nothing ensures us immunity as intense work with others. I'm grateful that I have a sponsor that taught me my job now is to clear away the garbage so that I can help others. My job is to meet the newcomer. My job is to go into a meeting. It says in the book we meet frequently. This is why we meet frequently. This is why we have meetings. Not so I feel better. Not because I need a meeting. Now, those things are great. Makes me feel better. Sometimes I feel like I need a meeting. But it says we meet frequently so that the newcomer can find the fellowship they seek. I'm grateful I wasn't taught. If they want it bad enough, they can call me. I try, and I don't always do it. Look, I told somebody the other day, they were a little shocked by this. I was taught when I go to a meeting, I look for the people I don't know. I extend a hand to them, introduce myself. Not only do I do that, I give them my number, but I try to get their number. It's life-changing. I told somebody the other day, I don't like doing it. I really don't. I don't like. It's so uncomfortable. Now, I want to do it. Every fiber in me wants to do it to be helpful, but I don't like doing it. I've been rejected. Hey, Nikki, how are you doing? I'm, you know, Belinda. And then it's like, oh, no, I don't need a sponsor. And I didn't say nothing, you know. I don't like that. It's uncomfortable. My ego gets in the way. Bam, I'm separated again. But I'm grateful for when it's received. I'm grateful when I can see beyond the persona and see some truths. I can see, with God's help, I can't do any of this on my own. I can see the soul sickness within and the cry for help. And I'm so grateful that God's placed me in that position to be helpful. I believe, just like I was taught and continue to do, that the process of recovery is about taking women through the steps, word by word, line by line, page by page. The directions are all there. Mike mentioned it last night, service. I'm grateful to have held different positions in service. I'm not a very good member of what I would call my home group. That's been coming to me in prayer and meditation. I've been knowing it, just kind of disregarding it. If Alcoholics Anonymous saved your life and you're so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous, what are you doing in and for Alcoholics Anonymous? We meet frequently so that the newcomer can find the fellowship they seek. I love the word, you know, it talks about trudge the road of happy destiny. I used to think the word trudge was like I could just picture myself walking through this mud going to the barn to get the horse, and it's like a little heavy. Trudge is with purpose. Y'all taught me how to do that. You taught me how to show up. You taught me how to start trying to live what the St. Francis prayer says, not what I said earlier. Y'all taught me that with God's help, I can love. My job is to love y'all. My job is to bring y'all comfort and light and joy. And I'm grateful that one day at a time, God can use me as long as I stay out of the way. A lot of times I just go blank and I'm like, are we done? Again, I want to thank the committee. The Deep South Convention has been instrumental in my own recovery, as well as a lot of people here. And I can't thank you enough for allowing me to get up here to be a part of this journey with you. Thank y'all. Thank you.